Welcome to the Venus Index Podcast. I'm John Barbin, and with me is Carla Meyer-Hill, and she placed sixth in our open contest. If you're listening on iTunes, go over to venusindex.com and check out her pictures. We were just talking off air, I guess, or before we started recording, about the picks. I think they look great, but Carla had a little – I mean, you like these, but you also wanted a little bit more fitness-specific stuff. Let's kind of do this one backwards. Do you want to talk about the actual – picture taking first, or where do you
sure.
want to go?
Okay,
let's get into that since we just finished talking about it a little bit.
Excellent. And I wanted to say first, thanks for having me, John.
Oh, well, I mean, you deserve to be here because you placed in the contest.
Well, thanks. I'm so excited. So.
Okay, so let's roll.
All right. So anyway, what would you like to know about the pictures first?
Well, I don't know. Just get back into what you said because we had a little discussion going about, like, the difference between taking I don't know what you call this, like a...
You call them more like fine art pictures.
Fine art picture? Yeah, no, they're creative. They're really super creative. They look cool. But there's a difference between taking like a bodybuilding style shot and a shot that's more of something more of like a headshot or a portfolio shot versus like a bodybuilding or fitness portfolio shot.
Absolutely.
And you were kind of hoping this guy could pull up some more muscle definition with the lighting, and he didn't necessarily – maybe he just didn't actually know – how to do that?
Yeah, I think he probably didn't, and I guess I won't link him to this podcast now because I'm about to spew forth about it. But and this is one thing that I really wanted to address on the podcast for those who are listening who are maybe going to do some kind of fitness photo shoot. Some of the places where I feel like I went wrong, and in retrospect, I could have done a better job of directing my photographer, and really being a little bit more. Direct about what my objectives were, what the postural poses were that were going to be those compulsory poses, and make sure that we got several shots of each of those poses, because I feel like that was a big weakness in my submission package, that when I collected the pictures to look at them after the photo shoot, I only had a few to choose from on those front, side, back, without any props. And so I really didn't give him enough direction. So I just encourage anybody who's working on this kind of a shoot, for future contests to really give that some thought and make sure you're really direct with your photographer.
Yeah, because like I told you off air, even the photographer we're working with, he's a younger guy, he does it on the side, and we're kind of coaching him up, and that's kind of what you need to do. If you don't get a photographer who's done fitness shoots before and know specifically that you're like, look, I want the muscles to show up, and I don't want this to be like a vanity shot. I want, like, if they don't get that or they've never done that before, they should know enough about lighting to do it, but I mean, you're paying them, right? So you push, you make them do what you want. Otherwise, they're going to turn it into this is going to turn more into something else, not what you maybe necessarily wanted.
Absolutely. So it seems like it turned more into portfolio work for him and some fine art shots for me and a great day and a fun day for me, but didn't necessarily, show me in my best light, no pun intended, and show off all the hard work that I have done to get my physique looking where it is. I took some photos of myself in February at home with some directional lighting from above that was just nice, harsh lighting in a dark room, and it showed my definition a lot better. So, just a few things to think about as you're preparing your photo shoot.
Yeah, definitely. And I just want to reiterate that we've had similar experiences where our photographer, if left to his own devices, it would just turn into a portfolio shot. Like it took him a while to really get what we were trying to do.
So. Right. And I noticed on some of the postural shots, those are, just the relaxed front side backs, that what came back to me were actually portraits where he had cut off half of my body. So, his construence, is that a word? The way he construed what I was doing in my poses was that he could.
His idea.
Yeah, his idea. I'm so glib.
I'm with you. It's just you kind of because all they think they're helping you, but when you really have your specifics, you gotta put. It's kind of like have you listened to the podcast with Lauren Jacobson?
I have, yes.
Yeah, she said that she tells the photographer what to do. Like he knows like the lighting, but she's like, no, we're gonna do this pose right here, and so that's you gotta be pushy, right? It's your
yep. And I think that just comes with experience. The more photo shoots you end up involved in, the more you start to understand how your body looks best.
Oh yeah, the whole like looking better from the left side and the right side, and like just all that stuff, right? It takes a few. You gotta be in front of the camera a few times before you start realizing, oh yeah, you do have a side, and we all do. All of us have a side. Like yep. I should put up pics of me from like left and right on the same pose, and you could see how much different it looks.
I'd love to see that.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I just know which side looks bad. I'm like, oh, that's terrible. I don't want to put that up.
Yeah, it was such a learning experience now to come back and look at the pictures and remember exactly what I was thinking as each pose was shot, and hoping that that I will be able to retain all this knowledge for the next time, that, oh, I should have leaned a little more to the right, or I wouldn't have gotten that crease on my torso, or I should have, flexed my hamstring a little bit more. All of those things, it was a great learning experience just to look and see the pictures and go, this could have been so much better if I'd done X, Y, or Z.
Yeah, totally. And that's the thing. That's the reason we say if you have the chance, do multiple shoots, just because, one of the cool things is with the digital stuff, you can look right then and there, look on the camera and see. An even cooler thing that we used to do was have an interface with a computer right there, so it comes up on a big screen so you can see it as it's happening, and you can adjust. But again, photos should take a while. If you start doing the assessment in between, it's going to take you all day.
Oh, exactly. He didn't show me anything. And honestly, I hired him off the internet for $98. So, what did I expect?
Well, that's not bad for that price. You got some pretty cool stuff for that price.
Yeah, sure did. And a lot of them turned out. I think he took about 100 shots, and he turned me back 50 that were remotely usable. So, I think 90,
and this was $100?
Yep.
That's a steal for $100.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And I culled it down to 25 that, any of those 25 pictures I'd be proud to show anyone.
So there you go. For $100, there's no excuse. Like, that's fantastic for that price.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because a pro is going to be in the thousands, right? So, a fitness pro. A fitness pro who can make you look like fitness cover magazine stuff, it's going to be pricey. So that's actually really good. All right. So, let's do your history. So, before Venus and then all the way up to Venus, a brief history of Carla.
Okay. Well, before Venus, I was pretty well conditioned from a cardiovascular standpoint. I'd been doing some endurance training. That had just sort of been a thing that I want to do, sort of a bucket list kind of thing, see how far I can push it and how far I can run and how far I can push myself. And I came out of the thing about, 20 pounds heavier than I had been when I started. So I weighed about 147, not this April, but last April, so a year ago April. Mm. And before that, I had gotten really out of shape, and I'd gotten my weight up to 160 at one point because I went through a long period of illness in my life where fitness was just sort of on the back burner. But before that, I'd always been a very active person. I had been in track and field as a high school student, and then I took up recreational mountain biking and mountain climbing, and even took up swimming for a while and hired a coach. So, I really was always interested in fitness and wanted it to be a part of my life, whenever I could have it in my life. So I'll fast forward back to a year ago. So I finished the marathon. I was going to do another one and see if I could improve my time. And, my body just was kind of tired. And I saw a picture of myself where I just looked kind of chubby running a 5K. And I thought, I'm asking my body so much to carry around this extra weight. I've got to solve this problem. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I just started looking around on the internet. I just wanted to do it expeditiously. I'm a real big believer in get in, get it done, get out. So I just thought, I know how to do this. I have self-discipline. I will just take the weight off and we'll go from there. But while I was looking around for, some diet tips and trying to figure out what would be the best way for me to go about it, I ran into some websites with bodybuilders and fitness pros, et cetera. And I just saw some pictures of some fitness pros, and I just thought, I can pretty much do anything I set my mind to. I just ran a marathon. I'm a resourceful person. I'm going to figure out how to look better. I mean, really, really look better, not just take off the weight, Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I got started and, embarked on the journey. And at that point, I just started doing a bodybuilder split program that I just kind of took off the internet and continued on with my dieting. And I wound up at a website where I ran across a former Open winner, Stephanie. Mm-hmm. And Stephanie turned me on to the Venus Index. And,
oh, cool.
Yeah, so by then it was probably, I want to say September or October of this last year when I met Stephanie. And so I looked at the program, and I wasn't sure what to think because I'm sort of a maverick and like to do it myself. So I just kind of continued what I was doing, and I was happy enough with that. Then she said, why don't you, if you're, I'm not trying to push you, but why don't you go listen to some of the podcasts? And I was really into listening to podcasts, so I said, sure. And went and found that podcast with Don Govro. Is that how you pronounce his name? Yep. And loved that and enjoyed the way you interviewed him and all the information you got from him. So I thought, these might be good podcasts. So I bought the Eric Ledeen podcasts and got a lot out of those. And then you all opened up the community to anybody who had made a purchase. Mm-hmm. So really your decision to open the community made a buyer out of me.
Great.
I went to the community, saw all the wonderful women there and how kind everybody was to each other and how fit everybody was and wonderful looking. And I thought, maybe there would have been a faster way for me to do this if I had known about this. So I bought the programs, and that's kind of brings us up to speed.
Okay. And then the contest was just a no-brainer, or was that another level of, like, decision? Like, did you sit on the fence on that?
Yeah, it was sort of a no-brainer. I was slightly on the fence only because it was nearly a year of hard work that I had put in up to that point, and I was nearly at my Venus metrics when the contest started anyway. So I was like, do I really have it in me to push hard and really care at that level for another 90 days? But then I thought, well, why not? Why not? I like to have goals. I like to be driven. Don't be a baby. Just do it.
So you did it. So what workout were you on? Just the first phase or?
Yeah, I started phase one before the contest just to kind of get a feel for it. And then I got curious about phase two because I like to lift pretty heavy, and I just kind of had a feeling that that might be a little bit more lifter friendly. So I went and bought that, and I started doing that one. I ended up kind of taking it apart and tweaking it a little bit because I have some back issues, some lower back issues. And I found that training my legs that frequently was really putting strain on my lower back. And also, I tend to have pretty small legs. I'm not your typical fat store as a female. So, you know, the thighs and the tush and the legs are not so much of an issue for me in terms of having getting those whittled down. So I decided, just from my knowledge of bodybuilding and what I thought would be best, that if I discontinued training them multiple times weekly, it might be a good idea for me. So I pulled some of the leg work out and only trained my legs once or twice a week, and then, you know, just tried to do the best I could with the program as written. Beyond that, I ended up stopping at the pyramid section and kind of just hung out and did pyramids for a long time because I really liked that and felt like it was effective.
Yeah, a lot of people like those.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is. It just, a lot of girls specifically, when they get to those, they're like, well, those are the coolest thing. I'm like, oh, I would have never known. I would have never known girls would like them so much.
I don't know. I don't know if it's something about female psychology. I just knew that for me, I tend to be really low intensity. I do not care for high intensity interval training. I don't really care for metabolic workouts myself. I like to do things really slow and zen. You know, that's kind of my me time. So I actually like the repetitive nature of the pyramids, plus just the endurance part of it. You know, I just really felt I would always feel sore after a workout, and it just seemed like it was very effective and right up my alley in terms of I could just kind of zone out and do my thing and relax and work.
Okay. So what did you, okay. So that was it. So you hung out for those for the rest of the contest, or you just did a lot of them?
I just did a lot of them. I also did some of the X sets and supersets type stuff.
Right. Okay.
Kind of interspersed.
So basically, it was all phase two stuff, really.
Yes.
During the contest. And then dieting, I guess you didn't have far to go. Did you do much with diet? You just sort of status quo?
Well, yeah, I didn't do too much. I actually experimented with a bunch of different things. I bought the transformation diet because I was curious about it, simply because I've been listening to those podcasts as you guys were developing that program, and I was thinking it made a lot of good sense. It seemed to me that as your body composition improves, you can probably tolerate a little bit more. Your metabolism is probably running a little bit higher, and I wanted at that point to build anyway. So I was already starting to get the idea that I should probably eat up a little bit. However, I have to admit, I could not get married to the idea of eating at maintenance, which for me I think is around 1600. It just scared me too much. So
it felt like too much, like too high?
Yeah. And I've never been a big eater. I mean, I'm really not. So I really eat like 1100 calories a day, and that's fine for me.
Interesting. So the number it gave you just felt too high?
Yeah, I just felt too high. I mean, maybe I was just afraid. I probably was just afraid because I've been working so hard for a whole year to get off the fat. I didn't want to take any chance, especially not with a picture shoot coming up, you know?
Yeah, no, I understand. So do you know where you are now as
yeah.
far as
yeah,
– you have a guess?
I have gone up a little bit, and I'm now around 1,300 or 1,400 calories a day. I've put on about 2 pounds since the contest ended, which seems fine.
And how do you look and feel? Like, is it where you want to be?
Yeah, it is pretty good. I definitely want to go farther. I'd like to chisel out a few things. I want to work on building my glutes better. I definitely want to try to get something going with my abs. I mean, I'm not looking for a six pack, but I just feel like just that smooth sort of seal tummy look I've got going is a little.
You just want something, just a little bit more.
Yeah, just
yeah,
a little
you.
More. So yeah, so that I don't.
I got you.
That. So that's that. And I want to keep working on my shoulders and arms. I just kind of feel like genetically my biceps, because they are very long, they don't peak very readily, and I'd like to have a little bit more of a bump there.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, just keep training. You'll get it.
Yep. So.
All right. So, well, I guess we've already covered where you're heading next. Okay. So let's get into your business career's, well, unique, rare, the situation you're in and what the sort of change in your body, I guess over the last few years did, I don't know. You were talking about, this is the worst sentence. I'm not really saying anything right now. You know where I'm going with this? Like what we were talking about before?
Yes.
Can you trust me, everyone listening, that somehow this is actually making sense to Carla? So, go.
Okay. So we were basically just talking about how in my career, I work with a lot of men. So, you know, we talk a lot on the boards about getting attention from men and women, both negative and positive, and how that changes, you know, as your body changes. And so I just kind of brought that up to John when I was explaining to him that I work in the construction industry. And, you know, I have a lot of sort of even alone time with guys, and that I have to entertain them, take them to lunches, take them to dinners, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, of course, my body is something that always comes up because, you know, I think a lot of times, and you know, I'd never want to put down anybody that I work with because all the guys are just great. They're just great. But sometimes they just can't help mentioning things. And, you know, the best part, though, is when they will mention it to me in a positive way. Like, hey, I see you've really been training. You know, you're looking really good. You look really fit and tight. You know, what have you been doing to accomplish that? So that's always the positive side of it. Of course, the negative side is that I do get a little bit more attention now, and I have to be a little bit more careful on my clothing choices, for instance, that kind of stuff. So,
oh, because it just leads to a little bit more inappropriate interactions, or at least
right, or you know, and I don't
comments.
Even know. Yeah, and I've never had guys comment on my clothing really, but I guess mostly it's just that I'm sensitive to the fact that since it's obvious that I take care of my body, then someone might jump to the conclusion that I'm looking for attention.
Yeah, isn't that odd? Like, you can't just take care of your body for yourself. It somehow has to be that you want. Yeah, I see. I can totally see what you're saying, and especially in your industry. They could be like, well, why does she care so much about what she looks like if all she's doing is interacting with us all day?
Right, exactly. So, yeah.
I mean, that's a degree of narcissism on their part, like not realizing that, well, maybe she cares about it for herself. Yeah. So that's a little short-sighted for anybody who assumes that somehow your body means that you want their attention in that way, but I can see how that could happen.
Yeah, so I just want to make sure, you know, and especially because, you know, my husband has a big leap of faith in having me be in this career and know that I have to kind of endure a lot of slings and arrows, and he has to trust that I know how to reject any advances that I might get or whatever. So I try to be really respectful to him as well. And so that's, you know, it just is something that I'm always mindful of. How will I be perceived? And I will say that it's almost been a negative getting my body to such a degree of fitness. It's been a little bit, it's brought up some challenges that I didn't used to have to deal with. So
now, okay. So go into that a little bit more. Do you get treated like, do some people, I know it's not across the board, but so what are some of those changes? Like, do you get treated like, oh man, I don't know how to say. Okay, I'll just say it. Do they just think you're a bimbo? Like, because you can't be that pretty and that in shape and that, you know, all of that. Well, how could she possibly have anything intelligent to say? Because to them, that's not what they.
Yes, that does happen sometimes. I've gotten feedback from people where, you know, guys in the industry have had made comments such along the lines of, "Oh well, Carla's a great looking girl, but I don't know what she's doing in this business." Which, you know, I think is a way of saying that she probably doesn't know anything, or maybe she's just here thinking that she can use her looks. Or, you know, whatever. So that, you know, but it's fine really, because any time I've heard that, I wouldn't even say I take it as a challenge, because I'm just not a real emotional person about those kinds of things. So I know what I know, and I know that I'm good at my job, and I know that I'm competent, and I know that any guy who thinks that can speak to me for 10 or 15 minutes and he'll catch a clue. He'll figure out that I know something and that I have something to bring to the table. So it's overcome.
Right. So it's kind of, it's like a 2 out of 10 for how much it bugs you now.
Yeah, pretty much. Unless I hear something real egregious, it's really very minor. So.
Right. Gotcha.
But, you know, on the subject though of comments that you get from people, and again, this is something that we've discussed a lot in the community lately, especially as some of the ladies have gotten, you know, real close to their metrics, is this blowback that you get. And there was always sort of an assumption that it mostly comes woman to woman.
Mm.
But I get it from men a lot too now, where I'll get comments like, "Oh, please promise me you won't lose any more weight, or you're way too thin. I'm really worried about you. You know, stop what you're doing." The worst one is, "What does your husband think about all this?" So you know, guys do it too, for sure. And
yeah, no, I hear you. I still find it interesting that people feel it's their position or right to say things like that to other people.
Yeah.
I don't quite know where that's rooted, because who the hell are they to say that? Like, I don't know, man. Unless you've been hired as their coach.
Like, well, you know, yeah. I really liked what I think Shannon said in her podcast. She said, I feel like saying, you know, "Where were you when I was putting on weight with your public service?"
100%. It's socially. So I think me and her said that, or I can't remember who.
Yeah, I think it was the two of you.
Yeah, yeah. Right when you need a kick in the ass, you don't get it. And then when you're making progress, people start holding you back. It's like, you kidding me? Like, when I was 40 pounds overweight, why didn't you just come up and say, you got to do something? But well, it's socially taboo to point it out.
And that brings me to a point that I really wanted to bring up on this podcast, which is that I think women really need to learn to give themselves permission to weigh less. It's not just the men who get brainwashed by mainstream fitness mythology, or whatever you want to call it, that they need to weigh more. You know, I know for men it's an aesthetic thing. Men always think, "Oh, well, if I'm bigger, I'll be more powerful and it'll be better." You know, for women it's a whole different reason why we get that feedback. But still, that was a barrier that I had to overcome as I began to drop in weight. You know, I was kind of listening to the popular statements that everyone would make. "Oh, average woman should weigh around 135, 140. That's a healthy weight for a woman." Mm. Yeah, it's perfectly healthy. I'm not saying it's unhealthy, but, you know, as I dropped lower and lower and lower and felt better and better and better and still had plenty of subcutaneous body fat that was measurable, was something to overcome.
I'm just trying to process this. So you're talking about permission to be light for women too.
Yeah, permission to be light for women, because I think there's a whole lot of swimming upstream that we have to do as we go about sculpting our bodies. There's almost a sort of global negative inertia, it seems like, that has set in concerning surrounding women's body image and body weight, because it requires work to have.
Oh, you guys have it so much worse than us. You can't be heavy. You can't be light, because it's like light, then you have an eating disorder. Heavy, well, it's just no one wants to be heavy. And then there's nowhere to go, right? You start losing weight. Oh, do you have an eating disorder? What's wrong with you? Like, you're getting too skinny. And then you get heavy and you don't like being heavy. So it's just, there's nowhere to go, right?
Yeah. And I'm always saying this in the community, because, you know, often you'll read people will worry and they'll say, "Well, gosh, I'm worried that I'm getting a little bit orthorexic, or that I'm developing some kind of eating disorder or disordered thinking surrounding my eating, because I'm always thinking about what to eat." Well, you know, when you think about it, when, you know, before you were thinking about dieting, you were probably still thinking about food a lot. I think that people who have weight problems are thinking about food just as much as we are, but they're thinking about it in the opposite way, you know.
Yeah, we're all thinking about food a lot. Even people, I mean, we eat every day. So even someone who's otherwise not considered disordered eating, or has never even thought about losing weight or gaining weight, who's like just somebody out there, right? They have to think about food at least the multiple times that they eat, like whether or not they care about fitness at all, like they, this group of people that aren't into this stuff. Everyone thinks about food. It's now we're just talking about how much stress does it cause, and I get that it gets to an unhealthy level in some people, and that needs to be dealt with. And, you know, that's kind of like what Nicholas stuff does, and when you got to get to deeper rooted issues. But in general, all humans, all mammals think about food every day. Like we're actually one of the only mammals that actually has a chance to not think about it and go think about something else. But every other species basically is food and reproduction. That's it. And then they die.
Absolutely.
So we're one of the only ones who has a chance, who even have a chance to think about something else.
Right. And you know, to take your analogy about your excess weight being debt.
Yeah.
You know, imagine if you just ignored your bank account. You know, there's a certain amount of management that has to take place daily for the world to go around and for your own life and for your own health and well-being. So thinking about food and making responsible choices and agonizing over those choices is no different than agonizing over your monthly budget.
But it's worth – that's energy worth spending, because that's going to determine the quality of your life.
Yep, absolutely.
You can't just ignore it. But yeah, ignoring problems doesn't make them go away.
No.
Yeah, so like the idea, the goal isn't to like never think about food, it's to address it in a way that doesn't crush you emotionally and under stress. So, yeah, but I this whole, you really brought up an interesting idea that there's, and it's something I would have never considered until you said it, was the permission to be light for women. I like that idea that it's kind of like the, it's kind of like what we're trying to get to with the metrics. It's like it's irrelevant. We have a rough idea of how much you might weigh, mm-hmm. but you can be, it's like a 20-pound range from, like, it's really, we don't know what you're going to weigh when you're at a metric that seems to be close to your endpoint, and also it's, you're going to decide if you like the way it looks, right? But eventually you have to get away from the scale. All of us have to get away from the scale at some point and just start functioning within a shape and a body composition range. Like for instance, someone like yourself, and I talked to Ron earlier today, the goal is more or less recomp now. It's not, the changes aren't massive anymore. The changes are a little bit here, a little bit there, build up some shoulders, like you said, work on a few things. But the goal, you're not going to be drastically different a year from now. It's sort of refining at this point.
Right.
And that's, at some point, that means you put the scale away because refining is never going to show up on the scale. And two things, like you said, if you're otherwise healthy and you like the way it looks and feels, it's sort of irrelevant what you weigh. Even if you're not necessarily smack right in the middle of what the normalized charts suggest for your height, that sort of doesn't matter either because those are population averages. I'm kind of just going off here right now.
You're fine.
I'm not speaking to you specifically. I'm speaking to everyone right now. But I think your point is important. It's powerful to remind people that some people might end up a little heavier. Some people might end up a little lighter than what our numbers suggest. Same with the Venus metrics. I think it's important to point that out. Some of the girls that are more muscular and have laid down a lot more muscle over the years, they'll end up an inch or two above and they'll look fine. You could almost call it the muscular VI sort of thing. Howard says it best. It's the idea of a convergence point, and same with weight. There's not going to be a specific weight. And I don't know. I just thought you brought up a really good point about it's okay to be lighter than what the average says. And yeah, you guys have taboos all around it, so you do need people who are supportive. People who understand, right? Because the average person will never understand.
Right. Well, and you know, it was a real aha moment for me because I'd been out on the internet and you know how much garbage is out there, and I was on some message boards that were full of women who, you know, weigh around 140 who literally give the advice every single time a new person comes and asks, how do I lose weight? The advice is always eat more. Eat more to weigh less.
I just can't believe that.
It drives me crazy. But, you know, I really felt like I didn't have much support for what I was doing, and I was just doing it all by myself. I hadn't discovered the Venus community yet, and there was all this mainstream buzz in my ears about how, oh, you know, your hair's going to fall out, your uterus will fall out, you'll drop dead, it'll just be terrible, you know, if you weigh below a certain point. And then lo and behold, I got a little bit of some hormonal disturbance going on as I was working my way through my deep calorie restriction that I was partaking in, and I decided to go to a gynecologist, and I was really had a lot of trepidation about it. At the time, I weighed about 120 pounds, and I'm 5'5", and I didn't know if...
Hey, hold up. I'm getting some weird feedback. What's going on over there?
Oh, there is a leaf blower outside my window. He's going, sorry.
Is that what that is? All right, I was wondering, I'm like, what are you doing? Do you look like running the dishwasher right now? You can't wait.
No, sorry.
Okay,
Tuesday,
sorry.
I should have thought that the landscapers would be here on Tuesday.
That's funny because you were touching on like a relatively sensitive subject there, and all I'm catching is like this leaf blower. Okay, so rewind about 60 seconds, start
okay,
over.
Okay, so I was saying that I got some hormonal disturbances, and I decided that I should go see a gynecologist about it and just make sure that everything was okay. And I was
the leaf blower's back. Sorry.
What do I do? I could move the computer.
I don't know.
I know. I will take.
You know, it's not that bad. Let's just roll. It's just kind of funny that you started over and he started over.
Actually, God, and he's everywhere. He's everywhere. I could sequester myself in the bathroom.
He's just.
Okay, here we are.
Are you really in the bathroom right now?
Yes.
This is awesome. All right, so. Okay, so continue with the story.
Okay, so where I left off, I decided to go to a gynecologist, and I was really terrified because at 5'5" and 120 pounds, I was afraid that he was going to tell me to eat something and stop training. And I had no intention of listening to that advice. So the idea of being given that advice by a doctor, but you know, who put that in my head? Mainstream media and all these women on the internet who were saying, you know, you're not healthy if you weigh less than 130 pounds. So I kind of had a real aha moment. It turned out the gyno that I went to was recommended to me by a friend, and he was a real, real fit athletic guy who was an endurance athlete. And he just looked at my body and was like, wow, you have such a look of health. You look amazing. Well, let's do some panels, make sure everything's okay. And, you know, it turned out everything was fine. And eventually things normalized and I got back on track. But that was nice to hear. It was so affirming to hear from a medical professional that it's okay to be, you know, I guess a little bit of an outlier.
Mm. Well, I mean, and it's not like he just assumed at that moment he did do some testing. That's the whole point.
Right.
That the narrative of all of this is test. Like, I mean, we can assume all kinds of stuff, but until you test, you don't know. And so, I mean, if you're concerned, go get a test and find out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So.
Otherwise, all you're left with is comparing yourself to, like, averages. And not everyone lands right on the average. I mean, in a group of people, just because everything averages to a certain number, it doesn't mean any single person actually has the average. It just means everyone put together statistically suggests an average, right?
Exactly.
So, like, even when we give – it's like the mean, median, and mode. Like, not everyone is the actual median, right? Like, not – maybe no one actually lands right on the average number. And so that's why even the metabolic – the stuff like the metabolic rate calculators or the – even reverse taper diet, it's – that's our best guess based on the known data. But you could be a couple hundred calories above it, a couple hundred calories below it, which is quite dramatic over time if you're off by that many. So you got to – that's our best guess at where to start, and then you test from there. Absolutely. That's all you can – best you can do is test.
Well, yeah, and I've never had any testing done for my metabolic rate. But when you think about it, since I wound up so low in weight and I eat so little, you know, when I look back on what I was eating as I was gaining weight, it couldn't have been more than 1,800 calories a day. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just not a big eater. I don't have a big appetite. I'm pretty careful what I eat and
always
have been.
But you were gaining at that.
But I was gaining at that. So, you know, the fact that I feel pretty satiated and satisfied at, you know, 1,300, 1,400 calories, I really don't want for more. It doesn't concern me that other people get to eat more. I eat what is comfortable for me.
So the calculator's probably, you know, within a couple hundred of predicting you. And that's the point. You don't need to go get an MR test. It's just our number. What I try to tell people is it's not going to be more than a couple hundred off.
Right. No, and I think you're right.
And if it's like 400 off, then you are a total outlier. Like,
right.
But still, we're talking 400. So we're talking one more rough, you know, snack sized meal. Like not really, we're not talking another, like a bowl of pasta difference or an entire meal worth. So.
Yeah, and you know, too, I was thinking about this thing from the podcast on the DEXA scanning when you were talking about how your torso weighs the most of anything on your body. And for me, I don't have a really long torso. I'm really high-waisted. That's why I have a problem developing my ab muscles because, you know, I don't have a long torso. So it kind of makes me wonder as we talk about it if that is also tied into the RMR and why I weigh so little and eat so little because – the part of me that should be expending the most energy isn't that big.
Yeah, well, I mean, besides muscle mass, it's also all your organs are there. You might just be small all over, right?
Yeah.
Like, if we had the means and a sophisticated lab, we could measure you right down to the gram of every tissue in your body, but clearly you don't need to do that. You've basically landed on a number that works for you, and that's all that really matters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we've kind of covered a lot of stuff here. What's your, your take-home message for everybody? Advice?
Well, there's one thing I've been thinking about a lot. I listen to all the podcasts pretty avidly, and you often talk about the imposter complex, and I wanted to throw something out there about that. At least for me, anyway, I felt like Fat Carla was the imposter.
Ah, yeah. You know who else had that? Do you remember Cass had that?
Oh, did she say that? I didn't.
In her one of her former podcasts, she was used to being thinner, and then when she gained weight at her pregnancy, she's like, "This isn't for me." Like,
yeah.
So you're having the reverse imposter.
Yeah, I'm having the reverse imposter, and I wanted to throw it out there for anyone who might be listening, who might relate, and also for those who feel like they have imposter complex. Just as a reminder that your best self is the real you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's kind of a different way to put your mind around things. That when you're acting with self love and taking care of yourself and making yourself beautiful. That's you. That's all you. Mm-hmm.
And that has to precede. That's got to be present at any body shape or size too. So as you move around in body shape and size, you still have to.
Yeah, that you're beautiful while you're on the path as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. If you're not comfortable with that, that has to be present.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's a bit of a trick, but yes, you have to be comfortable along the path.
Well, yeah, and that it's
yourself at all places.
That it's okay to want whatever it is that you think is beautiful, whether that's a wispy model celebrity kind of body or a really built up muscular physique, or if you just want to look good in a size 8.
Yeah.
Whatever your aesthetic is, what you aspire to, you have to own that and be proud of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree.
It's your creation.
Mm-hmm. So. Do you want to leave it at that, or do you have a final thought, or is that your final thought?
I think that's my final thought.
Well, I think it's a good final thought. All right. So, well, thanks for being on the call.
Thank you.
So, for Carla Marhill, I'm John Barbin, and that's your Venus Index podcast.